our drinks arrived, and then we were interrupted by several of his acquaintances stopping by to say hello. Blackwell introduced me. Oddly, they seemed to know who I was. After their departure, our head waiter brought our menus. As we were examining them, Blackwell commented,
"I saw you at the game with Professor Hopkins' daughter. How's she doing?"
"She's fine. She really enjoyed the game, too."
"No, she's not fine, I'm afraid."
"What do you mean?"
"Didn't you know? She's deathly ill. She has Hodgkin's disease. She's here from California for treatment. Professor Hopkins is quite broken up about it, and I can well understand why."
I was utterly stunned. At the same time, I realized I should have guessed something like that sooner. He said,
"Then you must do me a favor. Oh, I see you weren't aware. Yes, it's a sad thing. Professor Hopkins is your advisor. Professor Hopkins is your advisor, isn't he? Then you must do me a favor and help me keep tabs on him. Let me know if there's anything we can do for him. I know his daughter is receiving the best medical care possible, but it wouldn't hurt to keep an eye on him, too. He's taking it so hard."
I said, "Yes, yes, I will." I then ordered something, I hardly knew what, an appetizer. I was thunderstruck by the news. Blackwell tried to steer us back onto our former topic.
"So now tell me, why won't you promise yourself to become rich?"
"Maybe you better explain to me how easy it is first." He leaned forward for dramatic effect.
"All right, I will. Basically, it comes down to this. It's a gobble-gobble world out there, Parker. Either you gobble or you're gobbled. It's that simple."
"That sounds frank, but it doesn't sound simple."
"Yes, it is simple, and easy to succeed at once you understand the rules of the game. Let me ask you this. Have you ever played around with mercury?"
"With mercury? Yeah, a little bit, I guess, when I had my second chemistry set growing up."
"All right, then. Let us say I pour a tablespoon of mercury onto this tablecloth. What would it do?"
He went through the imaginary act by picking up his soup spoon and pretending to spill some.
"The mercury?"
"Yes, the mercury." "It would form a raised puddle," I said.
"Right. Now, supposing I did this."
Using the back of his spoon, he whacked the spot where the imaginary puddle lay. "It would scatter into a lot of little puddles, little blobs," I said.
"Right again. Now, supposing I lift the tablecloth like this."
He mimed the act of hoisting the tablecloth from both ends. For a second there, he looked like Count Dracula raising his cape.
"What will happen to the blobs as they roll closer together?"
I said, "They will reabsorb each other."
"Right, yeah, right, right. But how?"
"Their masses will attract."
"You're missing a vital point, though. There is an important distinction. What is it?"
"I give up."
"It's this. The bigger blob always swallows the smaller one, even if it is only slightly bigger. That's rule number one. The bigger blob always wins."
"Isn't there some way of the little blob winning?" I asked. I said it just to hold up my end of the conversation.
"Yes, there is. Very perceptive. And that's rule number two. For the smaller blob to win, it must have momentum. In other words, the table has to be tipped in its favor, even if only slightly."
He was enjoying playing the professor. I said, "And rule number three?"
"Rule number three? Rule number three is, every time a blob gobbles another blob,
it becomes that much bigger, which means it can take on larger blobs. It also means it is less vulnerable to being gobbled up by others. And rule number four, if the blob keeps gobbling, sooner or later, it gets too big to be swallowed up, no matter how much momentum other blobs have. When it reaches that point, it rules the tablecloth, I said. Well, that does sound simple, as long as we're talking about blobs of mercury. Oh, no, no, no. Companies are blobs. Corporations are blobs, too. Believe me, I've sat on enough boards to know that. Now, Parker, here's another rule, and I want you to always remember this. The lion is the king of the forest. The lion is the king of the forest. He eats first. And that applies to you, too. You're a lion. So, my question to you is, what are you going to gobble up after you get out of here, after you graduate? Honestly, sir, I haven't decided what I'm going to gobble. It occurred to me this conversation would certainly have sounded strange to any nearby table. All this talk about gobbles and blobs. At least the gobbling part was in keeping with Thanksgiving, just around the corner.
You must have some idea. You must have some idea.
I don't really. I might take some time off, look around, travel some.
Well, that's good, that's good, that's good, that's fine. But eventually you're going to tire of that. Then what are you going to do?
What am I going to do? I don't know. I guess I'll know when the time comes.
Well, the time has come, don't you think?
I said, has it? I don't know that it has. I keep waiting for a bell to go off.
If you wait too long, you may not hear it. Then it will be too late.
He continued his urging, trying to draw from me an answer to the question about my future. Instead of being drawn out, however, I felt myself pulling back further and further. Aunt Ruth would say I was blowing a golden opportunity, but I just didn't feel comfortable.